Welcome back to the latest edition of The Audible. I am Bruce Feldman, joined this week by, instead of Stu, John Hadley, our ace research. Wait a minute. Is Stu back in town? Stu is back in California, back from his big vacation.
I would highly recommend you do a podcast with John Hadley. I think it'll be awesome.
We will at some point, I think. I think so. Stu, it's good to have you back. You weren't gone that long, but it felt like 2 weeks.
I wish it was two. I wish I did have 2 weeks in Maui instead of 5 days. But yeah, a lot of fun. Great to get away. You never get totally away though now. It's not like you're not checking your phone at some point. I noticed you had on a couple of our colleagues in Spielman and Brady Quinn. And actually, I saw a tweet of yours that said the one you did with Chris Spielman was one of the best episodes we've done in a long time, which
you took
coincidence
offense to
that it. I wasn't on that episode.
It had nothing to do with you not being on there, and it was nothing that I did with Chris. It was Spielman in that what I really liked about it, and I got pretty good reaction from it aside from yours, was it was really unscripted. About the only thing I planned on asking him that I asked him, well, there was two things. One was Urban Meyer related. The other one was a story that he'd once told over lunch about when he was playing with Chris Carter. And it's a good story, but a lot of the other stuff that was kind of fascinating to hear, which I don't know, I'm going to ask you this. You're a young dad, similar to say to Brady, you know, your daughter's a little older than his daughter, but not by too much. I am fascinated now about parenting. Fascinating enough where I read about it.
Do you want to start a separate pod? We'll keep this one, but we could start a dad podcast.
No, I don't think I'd be good at that. But you know, when I meet coaches or when I talk to coaches, a lot of times we end up getting in discussion with these family talks, and I'm very fascinated by it. It's because, you know, I feel like I am trying to juggle two young ones now myself. And so you have a unique perspective on it, and everybody is just kind of figuring out as they go along, and each kid is different. So,
well, I can tell you this, the Maui is obviously an unbelievable place. We've been there a few times now, but that vacation could have been just about anywhere and I would have enjoyed it, because it's rare anymore that you get to spend that much concentrated time with our daughter, you know, like we both have busy jobs. Obviously we have the weekends and mornings and evenings, but you know, 5 days of just us and seeing her, she's 15 months old now. She's doing things that, you know, like you know how it is. Like there, one day she does something, you're like, well, I didn't know you could do that now. You know, and seeing her experience Hawaii through her eyes, was amazing. So that to me is like, you used to go to a vacation before you had children. You would go on vacation to just disconnect and unwind and all that. Now I feel like you go to spend the quality time.
Are the reports true out of the island state that your young daughter was put up on a surfboard and was ready to attack the Banzai pipeline?
No, and in fact, and also, I don't know where this, in the tease to the last episode, it literally says, Stu is still surfing in Maui. I don't know where you guys got that idea. I don't surf. We do snorkel.
Yes.
Snorkeling
yes.
is fun.
You do not surf yet.
When am I going to do that? We had to get a babysitter just to be able to go to the beach down the street and do a little snorkeling, much less become a surfer. Hey, did you see that Fox did their upfronts the other day in New York, and a big chunk of it was devoted to sports? And I just saw this screenshot somebody put up. Now, you and I have known about the kind of game, college football games that are coming for a while, but hadn't been publicly disclosed. I'm staring right now at a picture somebody took from the upfronts where they're talking about college football, the Big Ten deal, and they have up the logos involving some of the games. I guess they're going to be on Fox. I don't think they'd be putting these logos up if they weren't. This is pretty impressive, my friend. Notre Dame, Michigan State, Texas, USC, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Ohio State, Michigan, of course, Penn State, Ohio State. Those are some big games.
They are big games, but I'm a little surprised, and obviously we're probably too close to it, but I'm surprised there were people that were so surprised, because Fox got the bigger chunk of the Big Ten. So why would you not?
They're surprised because it's never for reasons I don't know or understand, it's never been formally announced. Like, there's never been a big Fox Big Ten unveiling press conference. Everybody knows that it's happening, but I don't know that anybody's, like, stood up there and explained the details of it. So I would not blame the average college football fan if they have no – I assume they know Big Ten's coming. They might not know the details. They might not realize that Fox has the better picks in this deal because they spent more money. So these are the kind of games you're going to be seeing there.
Yeah, it's like we were both in Arizona a couple of weeks ago for the conference meetings, and it felt very different in that regard where, you know, being at the Big Ten presentation, you know, Fox has the big seat at the table, and the timing is really good in that, hey, you know, 5 years ago, I'm not sure the Big Ten brand was anywhere like this. Urban Meyer hadn't won a national title at Ohio State, and Jim Harbaugh was still in the NFL, and Michigan was just not the same as it is now. Also, Penn State was in such a different place, and now Penn State just won the Big Ten. So, I mean, you have some huge fan bases, and you have a lot of intrigue, and it's exciting football when you're talking about, you know, a Saquon Barkley and some of these guys here. So it's just right now, it's a very interesting climate in college football. And I think, you know, like as somebody does sideline for it, I'm very excited about that.
We've got a lot of your emails to get to because it's been a couple of weeks. But before we do, anything in the news you want to hit on?
I was going to get your reaction. We were taping this Wednesday morning. And the latest twist in a really, really ugly Baylor sexual assault scandal has come out. And I'll be honest, Stu, when I heard of this, heard this part of it, it was another Title IX lawsuit, and it's the seventh one that Baylor has been hit with. This was the one that I was kind of wondering if it was ever going to get out because it was pretty well known. You know, I had done some reporting on some of these Baylor cases and had been told that this particular victim, who was a Baylor volleyball player, it was pretty well known from what I've been told amongst Baylor female athletes, and that this person was reluctant to go forward, but that has since changed. And it's you know, don't want to say it's a bad look for Baylor because we're already past that, but it just still, to me, it's mind-boggling that Liberty University could have hired Ian McCaw, the AD, and he is prominently mentioned in this case.
Liberty University, which had the President of the United States unveil its non-conference schedules the next couple of years during their commencement address.
What?
You didn't see that? President Trump gave the commencement address at Liberty, and during part of it, he weaved in, you know, and I'm excited about some of the teams.
You're going to play Old Dominion? Mentioned that?
They, like, flashed up the graphic, and he ripped on them, or he made jokes about, are you sure? Remember Jerry Falwell, his buddy, he keeps referencing him. Jerry, you sure you want to play Auburn? You sure you want to play Ole Miss? I don't know about that. Yeah, I think some of those games hadn't yet been announced. They used that as their opportunity to announce them.
Not to get political at all on this, but it's gotten to the point where I honestly don't know what's parody and what's not.
That was one of the lighter moments in the news involving the president in the past week or so. We should probably end it there. So Baylor, you know, you think you can't be any more horrified than you already were, but now with this lawsuit where the woman says she was raped by 4 to 8 Baylor players, that it was part of a hazing ritual with the freshman players, that they would do this, that there was videos being shared among them. There's also a mention of dogfighting at these parties. It's, like, what more is there to say? I mean, it's you kept thinking, like, what more could come out? Or I guess we kept saying, like, nobody can take a chance on Art Briles because things are going to keep coming out, and they do. And the school is still paying the price for it.
Yeah, and I think this is going... this, like, you know, we said it would probably get worse before it gets better. If you are Matt Rhule and you walked into this, you're like, man, is this the program I want to be around for?
So Matt Rhule, next decade? We saw him in Phoenix, and I think he's very much trying to just turn the page, you know, show control remorse what for what control. Happened.
Yeah.
But ask James Franklin what it's like to walk into a school dealing with the aftermath of an ugly scandal. And in that case with Penn State, and it wasn't so much that new allegations were coming out years later. It was just that they just kept there kept being lawsuits and things that brought it back in the news. And the truthers were still just trying to, you know, defend Joe Paterno and whatnot. I mean, this is allegations involving recent players and the handling of it. You know, he put together a nice recruiting class. You would think this would be giving parents pause, you know, as more and more of these headlines come out. But I guess if you're a good recruiter and a good coach, you can basically just convince people like that was somebody else. That we're cleaning it up. This is going to be a different story here.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many layers to this thing. And we got to see where it goes from here.
On a lighter note, the last podcast I was with you on, I talked about a story I had coming out about a rule proposal that would allow redshirt players to play up to 4 games in a season without burning their redshirt. That story gained a lot of traction. And now you're seeing coaches being asked about it at the ACC coaches being asked about it at their spring meetings, Pac-12 coaches being asked about it on their conference call. Across the board, it seems like no coach has any reason to oppose. Like, every coach wants this. Now, it's not ultimately up to them, but you know, if we're up to football coaches, it seems like this would have unanimous support.
Yeah, I was I listened in on the SEC coaches call a few days ago, and each coach was getting asked about it. It got to the point where you just kind of like started rolling your eyes by the fifth coach. You're like, all right, everybody loves this. So Stu, it's quite a legacy you have taken from that Arizona trip.
I'm happy to have produced something from that Arizona trip. You know what's annoying is when they get asked about basically what we remember. We had Brett Bielema on, and he said he had concerns about the official visits. And mm-hmm. I asked him if he would have felt differently. He was still in the Big Ten. You know, sure enough, that's the other thing the coaches are being asked about. And sure enough, the SEC coaches think earlier official visits and early signing date is bad, and the Big Ten coaches think it's great. It's like that's become the college football version of Republicans, Democrats, is northern schools, southern schools, and what is in their best interest.
Yeah, and you get a lot of, I don't know if cattiness, but it just feels like, it's a lot of agenda driven. I do think that in the case of this, you know, I feel like it's not as bad as politics, where politics, it's like, you know, somebody who looks at it and goes, all right, you know, this, both sides can be morons about this, because they really cling to, well, is this what our party thinks now or whatever? Is this, you know, and they just defend it over anything. Whereas, again, at least the football coach is just like, all right, well, when I was in the North, this benefited me this way as opposed to in the South. I don't think it's necessarily, you know, it's kind of more of a self-indulgent than anything else.
It's self-interest, but, you know, and we see that a lot in college football. People change jobs and suddenly they have a different stance on something. But there's no question that earlier official visits benefits the schools in the North, so that players will be visiting them paid for official visits at a time when it's just nicer there and earlier in the process, so they can commit earlier to those schools. And it's not, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. If you're in the SEC, which has been dominating recruiting for years and years, there's no reason for you to support any changes to the recruiting process, because it's been working out for you pretty well the way it is.
Good point. Do you want to jump into the mailbag right now?
Let's jump into the mailbag.
It's the mailbag from a computer. So not literally a bag, but just mail.
And as always, you can send your emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And let's begin with an interesting question from David. Gentlemen, in your most recent podcast, most recent at the time this was written, Bruce noted that it, quote, almost never ends well for college football coaches. I guess that makes sense, since only a limited number of schools each year feel they had a really good season. Can you guys identify coaches in the past decade or two for whom it did end well? Would Pete Carroll make your list, even though the consensus seems to be that he jumped ship just ahead of the NCAA sanctions?
I really don't think that was, from talking to people, and granted, a lot of these are Pete Carroll guys, but even at the time, I don't think that was the biggest reason why Pete Carroll jumped. I don't really don't think he expected, and USC did not expect to get as hit as hard as they did. So
I would also say, while hardly a – I mean, he left for a better job, but they did have their they had just had a down. So they had just – their run of dominance had just ended the year before. So it'd be hard to say he kind of went out on top. When I think of this and I was trying to rack my brain, it is amazing how few guys pull it off. Tom Osborne did. He left on a national championship. One guy that comes to mind is Barry Alvarez, who got to pick his own successor in Bielema, became the AD, definitely ended well for him. I was thinking Frank Beamer, but Frank Beamer, they weren't very good by his last – three or four years of his tenure there.
But I do think there's a, I feel like it ended pretty well for him because it didn't seem like it was that
messy.
Hey,
as long as you're not getting fired, it ended relatively well for you.
Yeah. It ended kind of well in a weird warped way. It seemed to end well for Charlie Weiss because he's made a fortune.
Oh my gosh. What did it end up being, like $25
million? Yeah. I don't even remember what the final figure was on, if you look at both that and the KU
It just
one.
Came out that, final tally for the Notre Dame buyout was around $18 million, and Kansas was around $7 million. So financially, yes, it worked out very well for him, although I wouldn't say it did on the field.
If you start going through some of these, I'm going to rattle a few names off to you. And these are guys who won national titles in some capacity with, at least in our lifetimes. Mac Brown, that definitely didn't end well. Not only did it not end well, and maybe this is a function of him being kind of forced out in the age of social media. Like, in some ways, Mac Brown, who I think really did do a good job, he won a national title, built Texas back up, but he became sort of a internet, like a meme punchline.
Yeah. No, no question about the quarterbacks in particular.
It did not end well for Phil Fulmer from Tennessee.
Nope. Les Miles.
No, that's another example.
Larry Coker.
No, it certainly didn't end well for Larry Coker.
Jim Tressel. Did not end well for Jim Tressel.
Steve Spurrier,
that's a tough one. I can't say that it did. I mean, he quit in the middle of a bad season. Yeah. His was a little more abrupt, right? A lot of these guys hang around thinking they can turn it around. Bobby Bowden would be a good example of that. And then just, they can't stick around anymore. Spurrier left at the first hint of things have gone south.
We're obviously also not mentioning maybe the most obvious choice on this. We referenced Penn State before.
That did not end well.
But
the question was who did it end well for? And all we've come up with is Alvarez and Osborne.
Because then there were guys who ended up being ADs. Did it end well for Barry Switzer?
No. Didn't he get fired?
What the hell? I should know this off the top of my head. What the hell did Barry? How did Barry Switzer exit out of there?
I thought he got fired. Fired or resigned?
He resigned. Beleaguered Switzer resigned at Oklahoma.
I could see why you would be confused about that, because then the next thing you know, he's coaching the Cowboys. Oh, no, there was 6 years between then and the Cowboys.
Yeah, it didn't end well. I don't know if it didn't end great for Howard Schnellenberger. He left Miami very awkwardly because of a power struggle.
What about Lloyd Carr?
It didn't end well.
The fans had soured on him pretty much. Yeah, he lost to Appalachian State his last year. No. Man, this makes you wonder, right? And I'm just looking. What I'm looking at now is just schools. I mean, look at some of what happened to Mark Helfrich. Based on this history, right, it would seem more likely than not that it's going to turn south for Saban before he's done, or it's going to turn south for Urban Meyer before he's done. Like, the chances that those guys will know exactly when to leave when things couldn't be better are pretty low.
I predict both guys will end up on a high note.
I predict one of the two will not, but who could say?
I would not be surprised.
Remember, there was a time when Urban Meyer did not leave on a high note when he thought it appeared he was done.
But he really seems to have learned from some of the things that had gone on. I mean, look, there was I don't even want to call it a narrative because that cheapens it, but there was, the image of Florida football, Tim Tebow aside, had a had a very sullied perception, and you don't see that at Ohio State. I mean, I know some people will try to put that on him, but I mean, let's be honest, he's been there for long enough. You do not see a track record that is that way.
Well, the other thing you can't predict is scandals. Never would have predicted Jim Tressel's tenure to end the way it did. And a lot of the coaches that we mentioned, and you know, NCAA or other issues contributed to it. So, man, I got to give David credit for this question. It had not occurred to me, like you think of a Fulmer or Bowden, but it did not occur to me just how few guys managed to go out on top.
Yeah. Our next question, Stu, is from Abel in lovely San Diego. Stu and Bruce, last week I noticed there an anonymous NFL scout gave his take on Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. Regarding Rosen, he said, quote, "He's the one I know the best. He's got size, athletic tools, velocity. He's just a mess off the field, and he's coming off the injury. He needs to grow up, but the talent is off the charts," end quote. And this is Abel's question. "I may be young and naive. I'm 35, so it's unlikely. But since when does having a hot tub and political opinion equate to being, quote, a mess? Jameis Winston had an open sexual assault case, among other questionable judgment cases, yet he was drafted first overall. But somehow hot tubs are beyond the pale."
Yeah, I'm going to give that to you. You know Josh Rosen's right there in your backyard, literally.
Yeah, look, you know, anonymous scout. Here's the stuff that I believe is real questions with Josh Rosen. Coming off an injury, he's going to have a year to prove, you know, does he have, you know, the juice back in his arm, which I'm pretty sure he does. The questions with him are going to be twofold. And I don't know if I would – I think the being a mess to me is probably a poor choice of words on that. But the question is going to be, one, how much does he love football? Because he's a very bright kid and extremely intelligent and has, you know, seems to have other way off the field interests. And the second thing is, how well does he take coaching? And that is, you know, look, he's on offensive coordinator number three, and that's a function of UCLA more than anything else. But so we'll see what he does with Jed Fish, who has NFL ties and, you know, an NFL resume. And going forward, we'll find out more about that. But I think, look, some of the perception that you're talking about here is the function of being, you know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated last year, and he's been a high-profile kid, so people know about him. I think that the more people know about you, the more you're projected out there, the more scrutiny is going to be there. You know, whether it's true or you know, or not, people tend to poke holes in that. Like, I felt a little awkward. This is a kind of an aside. A month or so ago, when all of a sudden there were kind of reports coming out about Josh Dobbs being a possible first round pick. You know, I was like, you and I talked about it before the podcast, and I'm like, ooh, the swords are going to come out on like this awesome kid who's like a, you know, great representative of, you know, college athletics, you know, certainly academically and what he does off the field. But all of a sudden now you're a first round guy, and it gets, you know, all of a sudden you get held up to a different level of scrutiny.
Just like it, we said, you never know which Saban Meyer could go south even when you least suspect it. You know that with Darnold and Rosen and everybody just assuming they're going to be these, you know, the first quarterbacks taken next year, that it's going to, by the time we get to next year's draft, some people have picked them apart and one of the two will have sunk. I don't know which one. It seems like there's much more concern about Rosen. But of course, Darnold hasn't played that much. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, look, I wouldn't be at all shocked, and this is probably wishful thinking from people inside USC, that he may not leave after, you know, even if he does have a really good year, then he may want to stay another year. And it's who just, you know, there's no, you know, he's only played 1 year, so we'll see.
That wouldn't surprise me, to be honest.
Yeah, there's a lot of time to get to before next spring's NFL draft.
So Peter Fumo in Horsham, Pennsylvania, dear Stu and Bruce, I'm sure that over the years you've spoken to coaches who have been head coaches at both the NFL and college levels. Is there a general consensus on differences in skill sets needed and which is more difficult? You know, there's obviously the bigger picture issues, but I was surprised in talking to one person who's done both how much the actual on-field feels different to them in terms of literally the hash marks are in different places. The clock is managed differently. That, like, actually managing a game is a lot different between the two levels.
Yeah, and look, as Chris Spielman himself pointed out last week, it's a much cleaner game in the NFL. The quarterback play is at a much higher level. And I think the gap between a really good player and somebody else who's on the field isn't as significant in the NFL. So, plus you have way more time. This is, you know, and I heard this from somebody who coached with Charlie Weiss. Charlie Weiss, you know, in the NFL, you know, you can have players who can retain a lot and do a lot more, whereas you can't change your game plan radically, the style of play, you know, from week to week. You just don't have time, and the players can't adjust to it. So I do think that there are some guys fit better at those levels. And I think, you know, we mentioned Pete Carroll before earlier in the podcast. I think there are a lot of people who are skeptical how well his style of coaching would translate in the NFL because it was, quote, you know, too rah-rah in college. Well, you know, he's won a Super Bowl and turned out to be a great coach at both places, you know, but I'm not sure how many guys are that way. We'll see, you know. This is a question I have for you, and I know you haven't spent any time around him, and neither have I. How great of a coach or how good of a coach do you think Bill Belichick would be in college football?
I don't know that. I don't know, because they're so different. And sometimes I wonder what NFL coaches do all offseason, because it seems to me there's not nearly the demands there isn't. I mean, they don't have to recruit. Recruiting takes up so much of a head coaches and all the coaches' jobs. There's not the booster functions. There's not the you know, as far as I know, there's no SEC media days in the NFL. And then academics. Somebody's constantly coming to you saying, such and such is in danger of flunking out of class. Such and such broke curfew last night. Like, there's just not that to deal with in the NFL.
Well, here's something, and I'm curious, maybe we can kick this around a little better. The thing I've heard that makes Belichick so great, one of the things, is that there is an adjustment that you're going to get, you know, at the start of a game, because that's somebody's game plan for you, and then there's an adjustment to that. And what I've heard is great about him is his counterpunch to that at that point. Well, I'm not sure, you know, how easy it is to get, you know, 19-year-olds to be able to absorb that, you know, on that, to have that much, you know, he's dealing with Tom Brady, and he's dealing with guys who have spent a lot of time, you know, in the game, and well, I spend a lot of time. So
one thing I do think, where I tend to think he would be successful, is if he could do as good a job instilling a very unique culture that, you know, you hear about that all the time, the culture of a program. And I don't hear that as much in the NFL, but you certainly do with him. I mean, they just plug guys in and keep rolling, like the San Antonio Spurs. So clearly he has built a program, if you will, that guys come into. You do it the Patriots way, you do it the Belichick way, and you will succeed. That's kind of how Alabama is. But I don't know the intricacies of it enough to know if 19-year-olds would buy in as much as 30-year-olds.
Yeah, my hunch is he would be really, really successful. Would he be as successful as Saban? I don't know if I would say that. I could be wrong. But what I'm going to ask you is, give me one guy who has never coached in the NFL at any level that you think would be very successful, and another guy who also has never coached the NFL, you know, like who would be one of your top 20 college coaches who you think, I couldn't see this guy having much success in the NFL.
Because the guy I've never been an NFL assistant?
Let's say he was never an NFL head coach.
I mean, the obvious one is David Shaw. I think he would do well. Because so much of his, you know, his roots are steeped in the NFL, John Gruden,
sure,
whatnot, philosophy to begin with. But I'm trying to think of somebody a little less obvious than that. You know what would be fascinating? It's not going to happen. It's way too late. How would Bill Snyder do as an NFL head coach?
You know, at this stage, it's hard to say, but I'm guessing he would have done pretty well, just because.
You don't think the NFL players would have found his stuff to be hokey?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, that's people. You know, he's not Pete Carroll style. I don't know if I would say hokey. I just, you know, I don't know. Everything about them is the execution, which works. I mean, I feel like I would not bet against Bill Snyder, but I don't know if I could say. I mean, that's a good guess. That really is. I mean, when I asked you this question, I was thinking, did Stu have Kenny Amatololo in his top 20? And just because of this, you know, style of play, I wondered how that would translate.
Well, he wouldn't run the triple option. So it would just be how effective he is as a leader and a motivator, more so than the X's and O's.
Yeah.
The other one, well, I got one more for you. I think James Franklin could be a successful NFL head coach.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, when you asked me about, can he be a have worked in college, that's what I thought you were going to say.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he'd spent time with the Packers. He also has been interviewed for head coaching jobs. I definitely agree with you on that. This question is from Dustin Herr. Stu and Bruce, with arguably the best and most experienced backfield in the division, do you think Northwestern has a chance to win the Big Ten West?
I wouldn't call it a great chance, but, you know.
You riding the Clayton Thorson train?
I've been surprised to learn this offseason how well thought of he is in the Big Ten. He had a pretty brutal first season as a redshirt freshman. Then he suddenly looked really good last year, but you wondered how much of that was Austin Carr. But no, he's pretty highly respected. But, you know, you've also got Justin Jackson, who's a fantastic running back. And like you said, it's not just him in the backfield. I'm not that familiar with who's coming back on defense other than who's not coming back, which is Anthony Walker, for one. I think that division, as we've said many times, is not a bunch of juggernauts. So you're always going to be in the mix, maybe. But, you know, I mean, I got to think Wisconsin or Nebraska would come in ahead.
Here's a problem I have, and I don't know, you would know their offensive line situation better than I do. He took a ton of sacks last year.
Yeah, he did.
And I don't know. I mean, Brett Hundley managed to have some success, you know, in the similar kind of, you know, running for his life all the time situation.
They got four starters back on the offensive line. They've also got familiar, he'll have some familiar receivers outside of Austin Carr. I don't think offense will be their problem. It'll be, I mean, they got, in the last couple of years, they got pretty good on defense, relatively speaking. But some of the best players from that are gone now. So that, to me, is the bigger concern.
Yes.
Bruce and Stu, I know some readers you immediately recognize because of their location. Sean in Turks and Caicos. Spruce and Stu, given the recent layoffs at ESPN, are we now closer to a college football super conference with a smaller number of universities splitting a bigger pot of TV money between them? That's exactly what I threw out there last year in kind of a fun, a little bit fantasy column. The way this is headed, I do think that rather than focus on is this conference going to move to 14 or 16 or whatnot, think more radically, whether this is going to be 8 years, 10 years down the road, maybe longer. At some point, if we assume that ESPN and maybe Fox aren't going to have as much money to spend next go around, and to be determined or seen how much Amazon or Facebook or Twitter might be a factor in this. I keep saying it's not really Facebook. Twitter seems much more interested in live rights. I don't know. I could see them saying the traditional model where a TV network was saying, you know, it's worth it to be able to get Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. It's worth it to us to buy the rights to your whole conference, even if that means we're also going to have to find a place for Purdue, Rutgers, Maryland, et cetera. Will they just become more picky about it and say, well, we'd love to pay you a lot of money to show Ohio State, Michigan, but we don't really want the rest. But you know what would be great? You know how you could make a lot of money? If you guys leave the conference and pool with Oklahoma, Texas, USC, et cetera, and turn it like a super conference of college football.
Yeah, I feel like USC fans kind of kicked this idea around a few years ago because they were so pissed off at the NCAA. And, you know, I wonder.
But that's not necessarily, you're not necessarily leaving the NCAA.
No, but what I think you would be talking about is somebody saying, you know what, we have a brand. You know, if we can raise other people, then, you know, we're pulling away, then we can do our own thing. Now, obviously, I don't even want to call it entangled. I mean, the money that the Pac-12 is getting is still really, really significant. But I think what you're looking at is somebody looking at saying, well, maybe someday Texas will go independent or something like that. And then, you know, you start getting a light bulb in other people's heads. I just don't know. Usually, and again, I feel like this is, maybe I'm speaking out of school, but usually these, you know, people who make these decisions, I feel like outside of maybe the Big 12 people are usually pretty conservative, and they wouldn't make a radical move like that because it's so There's so much uncertainty goes with it. It goes against the grain for what they've done for so long.
Well, and there's a lot of loyalty to, you know,
those relationships.
Those relationships,
right?
No question. But with each passing year, some of that fizzles away a little bit more. I mean, we live in a world where Missouri and Kansas aren't in the same conference, and Texas, Texas A&M, and whatnot. I think it would come out of necessity. I mean, I don't think it would just be, let's do this because we have the luxury to do it. It would be if there's some sort of kind of existential threat to the model where you're no longer going to be able to fund all the other sports you want to fund unless you do this. And something like that. But all bets are off, in my opinion, when the college football playoff current deal ends in 9 years, because if you think it's going to go to eight teams or whatever, it would make sense at that time for some of the other pieces to change dramatically as well.
I'm curious, how often outside of work do you use the word existential? Does that come up a lot? You find yourself using that?
I'll be honest with you, it's been coming up a lot more lately. a lot of existential questions if you work in our business. No, that's a favorite word of mine. I use it a lot. Yeah, you know, give me your
equivalent. Pretend you and Andy Staples are sitting at Chick-fil-A. How does that come up outside of your work?
Outside of my work?
Yes.
Mm.
Use it in a sentence.
Right now, the sports journalism business is facing an existential threat to its entire business model. How about that?
And that's still kind of in the business.
I'm sorry, I don't have a good example for you that involves neither sports nor media. It's not like, let's just say in my household, it's not like me, Emily, and we're talking about Madeline or something. There's anything existential going on there.
Okay. We are at Scott Carey. I really liked Coach Fleck's interview last week on the podcast. Great job. Thank you, Scott. It was interesting to hear the row the boat was not just coach speak, but a whole philosophy for life. Everyone seems to just say that the American has clearly passed the Mountain West as the top Group of Five conference. Do you agree with this? And if so, will the American continue its reign this year?
I don't think it's even a question. I think the American is kind of, I know they would like to make it the Power Six. I'm not going to go there, but I do think it's kind of moved past the other Group of Five conferences into kind of its own category. And that makes sense because, you know, it's a conference that used to be the Big East, which used to be one of the BCS conferences. Also, the Mountain West, I mean, let's be honest, this is not the same conference it was 5 or 6 years ago when it had, I mean, think about who used to be in that conference. TCU.
BYU.
TCU, BYU, and Utah. TCU and Utah doing pretty well for themselves in the power conference structure. BYU out there as an independent. I mean, that those were huge losses. They got Boise State, but the rest of it hasn't really helped them out in any significant way. So, yeah, to me, that's not really close. Now, the one thing the American is constantly going to be dealing with and is dealing again this year is the turnover with the head coaches.
Yeah.
Did you see the Nugget Navy put out there recently? Ken Niumatalolo has been at Navy longer than all of the other coaches in that conference combined at their schools.
That's a hell of a stat.
Yeah,
that's
crazy. But when you think about it, how many schools have turned over coaches there just in the last 2 years, much less the time that, I mean, Neil Matalolo has been their coach since 2008, I believe. I mean, Temple has changed coaches, South Florida, UCF, Cincinnati, the entire East Division has changed over in the last 2 years. Temple, USF, UCF, Cincinnati, East Carolina, and Connecticut. In the West, not Navy. Tulsa, he's been there, what, about 3 years now? And that makes him a grizzled veteran. Memphis has, Houston has, Chad Morris has been in SMU 3 years, I believe.
This is going to be his third year.
Third year. And Tulane, yes, Willie Fritz, this was only his first year the past year. So that's a lot of turnover. And, well, I guess the good news is if everybody's turning over, somebody's still got to win the games. But I don't know, do they have a year, whether it's this year or next year, where it catches up to them and they don't perform as well out of conference? We'll see.
Yeah. Look, and the Mountain West does have some interesting storylines. Obviously, Wyoming and Josh Allen Our buddy Andy Staples just wrote a big story about him. Lots of people are talking about him. Even with Boise State losing some really good players to the NFL, I still think they're going to be good. But they have 8 or 9 starters only back, on both sides of the ball. Here's something, though, that I want to get to.
You're really going to mention the Mountain West and not mention 2-time defending champ San Diego State?
I actually was, but here's what I was going with that. A couple of weeks ago, you broadsided me with a little tweet about my absent-mindedness over lunch in Arizona, right?
Oh, yeah. That was a fun little story. Did we ever tell that story on the podcast?
I don't know. But you know who had fun with it? I was surprised. I almost didn't get it right away. It was Nick Rolovich, the Hawaii head coach, said something to me about the chicken. And I was like, what? And then I kind of got where he was going. I was like, oh, he saw it on Twitter.
So the story is, this was 2 weeks ago now. You hang around that hotel in Phoenix and then once everybody goes back into their meetings, we writers, and there were about, 6 or 7 of us, go get lunch. So this is a hotel restaurant. And I remember, the only reason I remembered what you ordered is because I asked for my sandwich on a different kind of bread, and I heard you do the same thing. You asked for a turkey sandwich on some different kind of bread. The food comes. Don't think twice about it. Start eating. Look over at one point and and you're eating what is a glorified Chick-fil-A sandwich, like a big piece of fried chicken. I'm like, I don't think that's what you ordered. And your reaction was,
you're right. I didn't order this.
I didn't order this, which raised the ethical question, because at that point you were basically almost halfway through it. This wasn't like you took one bite or two bites and went, wait a minute, didn't I order turkey? You basically ate half the sandwich, and you still told them to send it back.
Well, here, when you say send it back, it makes it sound like I was a big dick to the guy. What happened was, there was a lettuce and some kind of spread on it. And so, I kind of wiped down some of the spread because it was too much, and I just kind of put the sandwich back together again, didn't think much of it. Now, I don't want to say in my defense, because what I'm about to say is not going to be a good defense. But in my defense, that was after the first night I was there. I had had a little bit of a long night the night before. And I don't want to say I wasn't lucid, but I just wasn't that focused into what I was eating. So
I just knew it wasn't something you would have ordered. You wouldn't order a fried chicken sandwich.
Yeah. And then so when I said to him, hey, by the way, I didn't order this. And he was like, oh, OK, sorry. And then he screwed up my order anyway. So on the second time, and I was just like, ah, screw it, I'll just eat it. So
I remember George Schroeder and I, so you ate the whole turkey sandwich and you'd eaten half the chicken sandwich. And George Schroeder and I wanted you to ask them to box up the rest of the chicken sandwich. This was because the Hawaii coach saw the tweet, yes, and made a joke about it. All right, I really like this question. We are taping this the day after the NBA draft lottery, where the Lakers got the number 2 pick and seems fairly obvious who they're going to take. Lonzo Ball, his father, has been in the news a little bit. His father completely offended one of our FS1 counterparts on the radio this morning. Anyway, Stuart and Bruce, I'm sure you're familiar with Lonzo Ball's father, LeVar, and the cornucopia. Hey, do you use that word in conversation? Cornucopia?
No, I do not. I do not.
I can't say that I do. And the cornucopia of controversies and talking points he's generated during his son's single season at UCLA. So it had me wondering, if Lonzo Ball was a consensus 5-star football recruit and LeVar was still LeVar, what college football program would you think he'd end up signing for? Furthermore, what coach would be the most incompatible with LeVar Ball's antics? Bonus points if you don't say Nick Saban, which is the easy way out. I think you and I both hear kind of behind the scenes stories about helicopter parents in football, parents who are a real pain in the neck for the coaches to deal with. But there's never been anybody that I can think of that kind of became a public story like this in football. Todd Marinovich's dad?
Yeah, I could look. I mean, I work at Fox now. I might still be at ESPN if it wasn't for a certain helicopter dad at Texas Tech. So
that's true. But I was thinking more like this naked, and I guess it's easier to do in basketball, right? I mean, these one and done guys are basically, they know they're going to be pros before they ever step foot in college. College football, there's no guarantee that any 5-star recruit is going to be able to do his own shoe deal 3 years later. If it was going to happen, it would probably have to be the parent of a five-star quarterback.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I wonder. I could almost see this kid at A&M because Johnny Manziel was there and they managed to keep it on track to some degree. And I don't know if somebody would see that and go, oh, I could do that. In terms of the incompatibility,
if he's a good enough player, anybody's going to take him. Father, you know, whoever the father is, they're going
to
take him.
And the kid, to my knowledge, it's not like the kid had domestic, you know, like the kid's not done anything. It's the dad's a pain in the ass.
And he's going to continue to be now in LA. Good luck. Have fun, because he's going to be part of your life in LA now for the next however many years.
Aside from Nick Saban,
who would you be most incompatible with? Bill Snyder?
I don't know if I would even say that.
No?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure how hands-on Bill Snyder would be with the dad. You're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, remember, like, didn't they took, you know, Bryce Brown's brother Arthur? I don't know. I mean,
well, what does incompatible mean? I mean, Steve Alford just puts up with it. He does. It's like a non-story for him.
Who would clash with the dad?
If anything, this would be considered fairly harmless. Like, I don't think a coach would particularly care if the dad is going around going on TV shows and trying to get him a shoe deal. It's more the harder part is what you had to deal with, where the guy's calling the coach telling him he's an idiot for not playing his son more.
Right. Especially if the son's not that good. That's the thing. I feel like we're missing like a good answer here of who would like be pulling his hair out if he had to put up with a really overbearing dad.
Gary Patterson.
I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe that's not a bad answer.
Will Muschamp. Chris Peterson.
You just throwing names out, or you got like...
I'm doing the mental Rolodex and thinking of guys who would be just like incredulous about it. But again, they would all put up with it unless the guy is not that good.
Yeah. I feel like we're missing like an obvious one or something.
Well, let the listeners contribute, because we've got a couple emails later for something we talked about that people have answers for. It's a lot of dead air right now.
I know. You're generating dead air in my dead air. Head. I'm sorry. I'm like trying to give you a good answer, and I'm staring at the half-eaten chicken sandwich right now.
All right, well, think about it some more while I read these. Remember we talked about, somebody asked us, it was a really good question, and it was another one of these where you have to try to think of it on top of your head. The most shocking recruits who left their home state. We didn't have a lot of great answers, but
I had a good
answer.
DeAnthony Thomas.
That was a really good one, actually. Ryan Buschmeyer has two. One is C.J. Spiller, who was long thought to be a lock to go to Florida. People were pretty shocked that he left for Clemson. That is true. And Rex Grossman, Sexy Rexy, was Mr. All-Everything in his home state of Indiana, but recruited himself to Florida to play for Steve Spurrier.
Hey, a little Inside Magazine thing when I think of Rex Grossman. So we did a little department story at the magazine, which is, you know, grand total probably 300 words, going into his first spring. And there was a picture of Rex Grossman throwing the football. And I think our photo editor was like, didn't love the shot because they needed room. So instead of cropping it, like they had Rex Grossman releasing the football, but they had to lower the football. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. It's almost like it's coming out of his armpit. It wasn't that obvious, but it was like, no, something's fucked up here. And they just kind of, no, it wasn't my call. But anyway, sorry.
So that was a good one. And James Decker from Stamford, Texas, parentheses, James Washington's hometown.
Which I know is a tiny, tiny little place from talking to him.
One of the biggest recent shockers I can think of was Landon Collins. Bama was obviously a known favorite, but choosing Bama over LSU as a New Orleans kid and doing it on national TV at the All-Star game, surrounded by family members clad in purple and gold and his mother flipping out on TV, was some great drama. That, have you ever gone and rewatched that? It's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. That is a good example of that. I mean, for live TV, and you get really, because weren't you the one talking about the Lorenzo Booker stuff, where signing day drama, there's really nothing like it because it's so can be so awkward like that.
Yeah, and you would think, right, that the players that the parents go into those live announcements knowing who the player is going to say, and maybe she did. I don't remember all the details, and still wanted to express her disgust, or maybe it truly did come by surprise.
Yeah. By the way, I got two answers for you.
Okay.
And coach who might most likely would have a hard time putting up with the overbearing dad. Pat Narduzzi at Pitt. I just don't see that. And then the one, I'd be curious how David Cutcliffe would deal with it.
He wouldn't. That's a great – that may be one of the only cases where he would just tell
yeah,
him,
I'm not
tell
putting
it,
up, yeah.
I'm not putting up with this. We're not recruiting him.
Yeah.
Although I could see a couple other programs doing that. You know, you answered that question about Josh Rosen earlier, and I wonder in football
David
circles,
Shaw.
Yeah, how much the legend of Josh Rosen, if you will, began when Stanford passed on him because they just didn't like his demeanor.
Yeah, I mean that wasn't the dad though, that's him.
But I'm saying, if you're willing to do that, if you're willing to to not recruit a guy who is, you know, kind of the consensus top quarterback in that class over something like that, it seems to me they might also pass on a guy who's got an overbearing father.
True.
This last thing is just a concern that Eric Kay wanted to pass along, but I'm guessing you've heard about this being in L.A. Bruce and Stu, love the show. You guys helped me get through my long commute. I just wish you were on more often. I mean, I feel like Bruce is on every day. I went on vacation for a week. I was writing in because I want to spread awareness about the renovation of LA Coliseum. USC is removing the best seats in the stadium, replacing them with a tower of box seats, and displacing thousands of people who've been season ticket holders for generations. I'm hoping we can get USC to change the design before it's too late. I did see,
Eric, I am very versed in this.
Yeah.
Because my friend Ryan Abraham, who runs USCfootball.com and has for, I guess, 20 years now, his site has been all over that and the frustration they have from boosters who are being displaced. And it seems like it's a very screwed up transition that they've had to the stadium or the Coliseum renovation. For people who are curious to hear more about it, I would say go there because they've written about it more than any place I've seen and certainly talked about it. I got to be honest, if I didn't live out here and know them, I don't think that's the kind of, I don't even want to call it minutia, that would be on my radar. But just because I've heard so much about it, I'm sure Eric is probably already familiar with some of their commentary and reporting on it. But there's a lot of ticked off USC fans who are like, wait a minute, you know, we just won the Rose Bowl. We got Sam Darnold back. There's a lot of enthusiasm, and all of a sudden, we're finding a way to shoot ourselves in the foot in this way, or kind of cause ourselves a headache that we shouldn't have.
It's true. After all those years of soap opera drama, there, they finally got themselves about what, 9 months of good pub, good controversy-free pub. I think that stinks whenever something like that happens.
All right. And on that note, it's good to have you back, Stu.
Thank you. Let's do this again sometime.
Okay. Maybe Monday.
Maybe Monday. As always, send those emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. We'll be doing them more. We went a couple weeks without doing it. First, because we were in Phoenix and then vacation. We'll be doing that every week. Rest of the off season. Promise that. Can we make that promise?
We can do that.
And so you send those emails to theaudiblepod@gmail.com. And as always, if you enjoy The Audible, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts. Tell 10 of your friends about it. It helps get the word out. We'll see you next time.